Brain implant technology. What is that all about? We are joined on the line by Dr. Adam Pantonovitz, who is a biomedical and electrical engineer and director of the WITS Innovation Center. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us on the line today to chat to us about brain implant technology, which sounds so scary and like those people who are like, when the COVID vaccines were happening, they're like, Bill Gates just wants to track you and put chips in you and follow you.
Hi, Rilabukhida. Thank you for having me this afternoon.
Yes.
Great to be with you. Please do call me Adam. You're right. It is a scary frontier. We are at a time in our species where we have to ask ourselves many, many questions about the type of future we would like to create. And the brain implant movement is one of those potential futures that we have to question.
So what would the purpose be for a brain implant in terms of what was the reason that this concept and this idea even came about?
Great question. There are two general purposes or uses for these. The first is that if you imagine a medical condition that is that a patient has within their brain, these can be addressed through brain implants. And a very good example is a Parkinson's device, a brain pacemaker, which stimulates a certain area of the brain to help alleviate Parkinson's. Now, this class of device, which has huge medical benefits, is one class that is extremely useful. It is something that we should be doing. We should be researching it. We should be trying to alleviate suffering in our world through the use of these technologies. But then there's a second class of devices, which I think is now becoming popularized by, you know, historical science fiction, and that's where we use these brain implants to control and interact with computers, such as the internet. And that's really the type that I suppose would be a bit more topical for our species right now in terms of determining the type of future we want to build.
I'm always very careful, you know, hence I asked about why something was developed, because we do have a tendency with technology to always just look at the negatives and not take into consideration, look, with every advancement, there is some kind of negative. You know, people are worried about losing their jobs with ChatGPT. People are worried about so many things, but we aren't looking, for example, at what happens in the medical field and how it can benefit us. So now, when we come back to, cool, you've given us the example of how an implant can help a person with Parkinson's. What would you say in terms of, let's say, the next 10, 20 years, we would imagine these implants can do, and what could they be used for? And I'm not talking about the negative part, because in my mind, I've already thought about, imagine your brain implant being hacked by some hacker. Yeah. And it's, you know what I mean? But in terms of the positives, what could it be used for in the next 10 to 20 years?
Okay, great. And I just want to make the point based on what you were saying that there's this great quote by someone named Melvin Kranzberg on technology. And he said, technology is neither good nor bad, nor is it neutral. And I think that that really encapsulates the fact that technology is a tool, and we need to choose what we do with that tool to benefit and uplift our species. Now, some of the ways that these brain implants can benefit and uplift our species is through eradication of a number of diseases which afflict people, and, for instance, spinal lesions, which prevent people from being able to move. So with brain implant technology, we can look at things like recovering a person's ability to see, recovering a person who had a spinal lesion's ability to move. There are a variety of brain lesions or problems which can be greatly addressed through these technologies. And so these technologies have an exceptional positive side to them.
And I'm just thinking about, and maybe we don't know about it much as the public, but a person who is paralyzed from the neck down that is able to continue working by blowing into something, that is able to type and do all of those things, that is a technology that many may have been afraid of.
Right. Now, some of my work has been into these types of assistive devices that work to help disabled people. And we are incredibly motivated to see, you know, people have an easier time dealing and coping with their disabilities. So this is a really, really useful frontier for us to consider pursuing. The important thing there is that you can use brain implants, for instance, to help a disabled person to more easily and seamlessly engage with their environment. But since you mentioned that example, I think it's important to understand that there are two types of brain-computer interface, or BCI. The one is invasive, and that's where you have a surgery and an implant. And the other is non-invasive BCI, and that's used often in medicine, like electroencephalogram or EEG, to understand an image what's going on inside the brain. Now, that is a non-invasive way of doing things, and most of our work has been using non-invasive BCI. To me, our imaging technology keeps improving, so I think we should be using invasive BCI where it's medically helpful and warranted, and then considering non-invasive BCI, even though we know that the signal won't be as closely coupled to our neurological system, but we can use non-invasive BCI for a variety of use cases and get very, very far if we innovate with this type of technology.
But are we at a place yet where you would want to use it for, like, let's say, I, as Relebogile, say, you know what, Adam, I just want to enhance my productivity, be smarter. I'd love for you to be sitting and monitoring and give me feedback about these are the most productive hours of your day. That's like, is there room for that to happen where I don't have any medical conditions that would require it, but I actually want to elevate and become just a superhuman being?
Yes, so there is a lot of potential scope for that, but both with non-invasive and invasive brain-computer interfaces. And what you're really discussing or alluding to is what's known as the augmented human, where we can become cyborgs, the very best versions of ourselves, by looking at a variety of life-extending and intervening technologies that can help to boost our ability to interact and survive in the world. So this is a whole big discussion, really, that speaks to the longevity movement, that speaks to genetic engineering, as well as to brain-computer interfaces. But there are a lot of technologies that can get us to the type of future you're describing. And as the simplest form of it, just listen to a piece of good music. You know, you change your interface with the world, with technology, and you change your state of mind. And so there's a huge continuum here, you know, starting very simply all the way through to all sorts of things that we can do to enhance our productivity, make us live longer lives, etc.
Doctor, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so, so much. I know we're going to have a lot more conversations around this a part of the tech world, which is super fascinating, even though it is a little bit scary for some, it is quite exciting.